mindfulness practice, a particular object, often a thought or a sound or a word that we repeat again and again. And that's a concept, a contrived concept that we focus our attention on, and it develops concentration. Whereas the practice that we're doing here is based on a mindfulness approach, mindfulness of what are called the four foundations of mindfulness, the Satipatthana, mindfulness of the body. And there's various approaches to mindfulness of the body. Today we worked with the posture and the breath. There's also mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of thoughts and the mental states, and mindfulness of various what are called dhammas, or basically the functioning of mind, or the development of what we're cultivating, and how we're working with the mind. So the development of mindfulness works in a very different way than a mantra practice. So generally, I would say, if you're not really attached to it, let it go and just practice the mindfulness to see how mindfulness develops. But if you really want to do some mantra practice for the first few minutes of a meditation, just to help yourself get settled with a familiar object, it's also perfectly fine. I personally have a rather rebellious mind, and I like different meditation practices. And when I'm doing one, I don't want to be told to do another. So sometimes when I go to various retreats and I've just been doing a different one, I like to kind of make a gentle transition for myself. So the first few minutes of a meditation practice, I might not listen to the teacher. Oh, I can't believe I said that. Anyway, just the first few minutes of the meditation practice, I might not listen. And I might do what I feel like, oh, that's what I've been doing, that's familiar, that helps me settle. And then I'm more willing and opened to explore the new process, the new practice. And maybe that's not so surprising, because even in a traditional approach, we usually start with what's already strong. We usually start and develop some concentration with something that we're already used to using, and then develop another object. For example, I went through a training with the 40 meditation objects that are taught in the Theravada tradition. And once we master the first object, which was the breath, then we add the second, which is the 32 parts. But we start the next sitting with the breath, and then develop the 32 parts. Then the next, once we've developed that, then we're ready to go on to the next practice. The White Casino was my third practice. So then I wouldn't just start with the White Casino. If I sit down, I'd first do the breath, then the 32 parts, then the new object, which was the White Casino. Then I would go through all the various, there were 40 different objects, but each sitting would quickly go through the ones that my mind was already familiar with to establish concentration before extending to the next one. Now with 40, it got really busy. So I'm not suggesting that you do that. I just wanted to mention that underneath the wish to maintain some of a familiar practice is actually very skillful. It's knowing that something has worked for you, that your mind already knows how to get settled and quiet and calm with that object. So it does make a certain amount of sense to start there. But I would suggest giving it just a few minutes at the beginning to establish yourself, and spend most of this retreat exploring mindfulness of the present moment through the body. And as we extend the instructions through the retreat, we'll incorporate more of feelings into the mind. Please. When you said you only what? Oh, the gong. Ah, okay. So the listening to the gong sound. Nice. That's actually a lovely practice to undertake, when you hear the gong, to just stop and just listen. And let that be a reminder to be awake and to reconnect with your experience. And we're fortunate here that we hear multiple gongs. Some of them will be for the other retreat, and you won't have to do anything except listen.
And that can be kind of just a wake-up reminder to be present. It's also lovely at the end of the sitting not to just hear the gong and think, okay, now I'm done being mindful. I can go have a break. There's actually, you probably noticed, there was no break written on the schedule. There was no free time written on the schedule. We're trying to develop a continuity of mindfulness throughout the whole day. So when you hear the gong, you can take that as listening meditation. Just really open to fully listening. And then get up and move when you're ready to. Thank you. Please.
It's okay if I say it's meaningful?
I won't understand it.
No, I'm going to just say it. Is that for the viewer?
Yeah,
yeah. Gan? Gan? I think I'll just learn you, so. Just to say, it's a little bit of a reminder, it's not much of a thought. כאילו כל המידת הזה ממש מהיפורים, אני חושב שמכל רגע פנוי צריכה לברוח לשינה. ראיתי אם זה משהו שמשתנה, אם זה משהו שהוא בריחה לשינה, או אם זה פשוט ההתרגלות החדשה לתתרה הזאת שלוקח זמן כאילו. ומאיפה היפות?
טל. So Tal is asking about tiredness or sleepiness. She feels like she needs to, she said, run away for sleeping, for resting. And she wonders where it comes from, and also if it changes throughout the practice.
Okay, great. The interest in how something arises, where its origin is or where it comes from, what its causes are, and how it changes are two very important things to investigate. So that's something to really look at. So instead of just feeling sleepy and deciding to go to sleep, in which case we're not investigating anything, you can be interested in sleepiness. Oh, I want to know, where did this arise from? What were the triggers? What were the conditions that gave rise to this sleepiness? Sometimes we'll notice different things. There's often not just one cause. It's usually multiple causes come together. On the first full day of a retreat, even the first few days, for many people, sleepiness is just a very common process in the adjustment. The mind gets fatigued from paying attention all day, and we're in different conditions, and there's an adjustment process. So it isn't anything to worry about. But if you're interested in sleepiness, if you're interested in how the mind withdraws from the vividness of lived experience and dulls out into sleep, which is a very interesting thing to watch. Why do we do that? Why do we pull away from experience? We'll learn a lot about the mind and our relationship to perception, to whatever our object of perception is, to the quality of our attention. We'll learn a lot just by observing that moment when we start to move away to go to sleep. And you'll find that you're not just going from here running to your bed to fall asleep. You're first moving away from your meditation object. You're actually drifting off the meditation object. And that movement away from the meditation object creates a gap that allows sloth and torpor to come in. Sloth and torpor and sleepiness cannot arise if we are attentive to the meditation object. That's why mindfulness is an easy antidote to sleepiness. Because mindfulness brings us to meet the object, to really direct our attention to it. But it doesn't always work. Sometimes the movement and the pull of the dull state of mind is so strong that it's physical as well as mental, and the energy isn't there to cut through it. So you can just see it for to whatever extent you can. And then when the mind dulls out, don't worry about it. You'll wake up again. And then you can reflect, oh, what happened then? It's also interesting to consider some of the causes, and some that you can start to look for is to see if there was a pull away from that object because it was slightly unpleasant. It's common that when there's something slightly uncomfortable in the body, but not so painful that you're awake because of the pain, but just kind of achy, that we distance ourselves from the unpleasant by dulling out, by going to sleep in a way, or by slipping off into fantasy, because we don't want to meet the unpleasant experience. And so we might then just ask, can I be with this? Can I open to what's real for me now? Even if it's an achy body or a slight tickle or a little bit of boredom. Can I just be with that experience and sort of nudge ourselves towards wakefulness? But it's a good investigation.
Yeah.
Please. About the walking, you were mentioning that there could be 20, 30 sensations in each step. And I have two questions about that. The first one, did you mean just in the sole, in the foot, or in general throughout the whole body? And the second one is, you know, if I want to practice it, is it about feeling it or naming it?
Well, it's not possible to name 30 sensations in a... the question was about walking meditation. I had mentioned this morning that in the space of one step, or the, even just the rising of the foot, I think I said, one could feel 20 or 30 different sensations. Is that about feeling those sensations or actually naming them? And there really isn't time to conceptualize and to name that many. But sensations are changing very rapidly. And as we become more mindful and present, we'll realize that things are changing even more rapidly than we realized, because we generally dull to our experience. We blend and blur experiences so that we conceptualize, basically. So hand. Okay, just hand. But then if I drop my attention into the hand, I'm feeling heat and tingling and pulsing and coolness and vibration, tightness and pressure. And then as my mindfulness gets stronger, all of those experiences will start to become more and more vivid, and we'll see more and more and more and more of them. Because actually our experience is a dynamic process of many, 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 many changes. In fact, it's said that in the time it takes to snap a finger, that we can have, the mind can process thousands or billions or I don't know how many, untold amounts, uncountable bits of data. I don't know what the count is there. It's all higher than I can count. More than about 3 or 4 digits, and I get confused. But the point is that there's a lot, the mind works very quickly and perception happens very quickly. And we only know a fraction in our normal life. We only know a fraction of what's actually happening. As we become mindful, our senses become more refined, and experience becomes more vivid and clear. And in that clarity, it's not just that a taste tastes clearer and that the vision and the sights seem clearer. It's that actually we can start to see things more nuanced, more subtle, and more. And when they're changing, we see how they're changing. So we see more. We experience more. So we can start to actually experience what's called the arising and passing of experience. So instead of just something being, something happening, we see it appear and disappear. And so in that sense, in the space of lifting the foot, we can experience dozens and dozens of changing sensations, either in the foot itself, in the heel, or throughout the whole body, depending on whether we're taking a wide-angle lens for our attention or we're focusing the attention on the foot. And we can't make it happen. We can't decide, now I'm gonna rise my foot until I've counted to 30 different sensations. And the concepts won't be 30 different concepts. They'll be like 10 different kinds of tingle and 20 different kinds of pressure and a few different kinds of pulling, you know. The language isn't going to do it, but we'll see that sense of change, the impermanence and the vibrancy of life. Nothing in the mind and body is static. Nothing is fixed. Nothing is solid and stuck. It's a dynamic process of perceiving this changing body. And so as you take a step and you're really there for that step, It doesn't matter. You don't have to count them. The idea is just to see, wow, there are a lot of different things going on. It's not just the concept of I doing this action called lifting this thing called foot. I mean, that's really clunky. When we're really mindful, we're going to be just totally, there's not going to be a concept of I. For that matter, there's not going to be a concept of foot. We're going to just be feeling this dynamic process of tingling, pressure, pulling, lightness, pulling, heavy, heavy, tightness. And we don't have to name it all, but we'll feel it. We'll know we're there for it. We'll know we're alive for that step. And that's the direction that we go with the mindfulness practice. And that's part of why it really supports the development of both concentration and mindfulness, and can also be a vehicle for investigating the mind and body, because so much is happening in just a step. Thank you.
Please.
In the red shirt.
How do you recommend working with and observing dreams of the future when they keep coming back over and over and over again?
Well, you know, I understand that sometimes we're interested, because usually we're dreaming about how we're going to be in the future. You know, what I'm going to accomplish, how I'm going to be seen, what I'm going to do. And often we're quite interested in ourselves. But it's not real. It's just not real. And I think when we look at the mind and we look at those thoughts and we realize that there's this pull to conceiving of how we will be, and we just see, you know, actually that's just a thought. It's not that it's wrong, it's not that it's evil, it's not bad, but that's all it is a thought. And so just seeing it as nothing but a thought that arises and passes away loses a lot of the interest. Because we only keep repeating things because we are attracted to them, we're enchanted by them, we buy into them and believe in them. But I would suggest just seeing it for what it actually is right now, which is the thought. Let go of the content, because the content isn't really very important. It's usually about ourselves. It's really not important. We like to think we're the center of the world, but it's really just a thought arising in the present moment. And I have so much trust in the power of being present and seeing reality as it is. And over the course of my meditation, I've seen so many thoughts go by, pleasant thoughts and unpleasant thoughts, thoughts that are relatively accurate by worldly standards, and thoughts that are wild fantasies and imaginings that could never happen. And actually, they're nothing but thoughts. All just thoughts. Thoughts are important. I mean, I don't want you to be unable to think. I mean, meditation actually refines our capacity to think. It brings the mind within the realm of sort of a skillful use of the mind rather than a habitual use of the mind. But those thoughts that just pull our attention away are almost always just habitual uses of the mind, conditioned patterns that aren't going to take us to freedom. So I just would suggest seeing the process, recognizing that it's thinking occurring, nothing more than that, and just come back to something real, something where you can connect, which could be a sensation in the body, a place where the body is touching the ground, maybe where there's pain in the body, maybe where there's just the feelings of hands touching the legs. This can be a strong sensation where there's heat there. Something that can ground you in the body. Other questions?
Please.
Oh, two of you are there. Oh, either one is fine.
No, I don't know.
Oh, then the woman in the long. Yeah.
having a little bit, a lot of problems in my breathing. I can't seem to put my focus on my breathing without my breathing changing. And then I'm trying to just let it go and just accept whatever, but then I can't breathe. And then I have to think about something else or look at someone else to continue breathing normally.
You know, it's interesting. I think our attention does affect everything that we observe. There's some impact. But we can let it be very subtle instead of controlling and heavy-handed. And we can only do that just by continuing with the process. So bringing a quality of attention to the breath that's gentle. And if there's a little bit of controlling, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's so natural. I mean, even in science, the effect of the experimenter watching things has an effect. There's an impact. And I think we do, inevitably, when we observe the breath, we do end up changing it a bit. And I don't think that's a problem. What I would say is, please don't apply an idea that the breath should be long or even or some kind of spiritual breath, because we're not doing any kind of pranayama exercises or trying to perfect the breathing. We're just using the breath as a bodily experience to refine the mind. So we're really just looking at the mind, and the breath just becomes something to observe. And it can be very gentle. Just gentle. And it doesn't actually matter if the breath is long or short, if it's deep or shallow. It doesn't matter if the breath is painful and unpleasant, or if it's pleasant and easeful. For mindfulness, it actually doesn't matter. What matters is just that we meet the experience and we know what's happening. So if what you know is a tightness in the breath, and that as you're breathing in, you feel tightness, then just know that. And if it becomes, you know, like the tightness has become too strong and it's like bordering on anxiety or something, or fear or something, then drop the breath entirely and just feel the body sitting. Because the breath is used as one of the body practices, so you can just use the body posture or feeling sensations in the body, places where the body is touching the floor, the seat, the hands. So you can just shift to a different practice. You can open up to hear sounds to get a little bit more spaciousness there, and then just settle back into the body again. So you don't have to drive your attention to the breath at all. But don't also expect that the breath should be always the sublime, beautiful, smooth experience. I mean, we're breathing in air, and we're expanding, and we're contracting. I mean, it's this big muscular movement in the body when you start to think about it. Even the bones of the rib cage are expanding out, and that's not necessarily always going to be a pleasant experience, because when they're expanding, you might be pushing, you know, we're stretching a little bit. So, okay, the breath is not all that painful, but still, there's something happening. And we might feel the coarseness or the roughness of the air coming in. And all of that's just fine. It's just fine. Okay. In the back, please.
Yeah. I used to sometimes fall asleep for periods during the meditation.
Oh, you slept for years?
No.
That's a long sleep.
No, I sleep for periods during the meditation period. And then something happened where I struggle between sleepiness and wakefulness, and it puts me out of balance, and then I can't really concentrate on anything.
Okay, so if I understand right, you're saying you went through a period of your practice where there was a lot of sleepiness? And now there's not so much sleepiness, but there's an alternation between sleepiness and restlessness.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Okay, Okay. I'm actually glad you bring this up, because I'm sure you're not the only person in here who has been going through a seesaw, swinging of dull sometimes and then agitated the next, and dull sometimes and agitated the next, and you're wondering, where is this blissful ease? You know, to sit like a Buddha in serene happiness, when really there's this turmoil of dullness to restlessness. And it's really a process. And that you're allowing yourself to go through the process and noticing it, you'll know when you'll start to see how you fall out of balance on the dull side, and then how you fall out of balance on the restless side. Some of the things that can help the investigation is to see if you can notice that sense of seduction. What is, what does the restlessness seem to be serving for you? What's attractive about it? It may be painful, but there's something about it that is catching our attention, because we're investing energy into that process. And what is it about the dullness that also seems to seduce? What are those states? What do they seem to promise you? It sounds odd to say that they're promising you something, but in a way, sometimes we think that if only I just can fall asleep right now, then I'll be happy. Or the meditation will then be over. And I want that. I'll get out of here. And so we're seduced into a dull state. But if we really look at that, we'll realize, hold it, that's really not that's not what I want. That's not the direction I'm going. Same with restlessness. Sometimes we feel restless in the body, physically agitated. But often the restlessness is a restless thinking. It's just moving with thought. And most restlessness in meditation is the mental agitation that goes from one thought to the next thought to the next thought to the next thought. Always seeming to promise a happiness in the future. Like it's going to be better if I can just get to that next thought, or if I can just figure this out. And we're often seduced into believing that happiness will come sometime else, in some other state. But happiness is never found anywhere other than right now, in a peaceful relationship to what is. And it doesn't actually matter if what is pleasant or painful. Happiness is known through a clear encounter with the present, not through either the seduction to the past, the future, to dullness, or to restlessness. But I can tell you that, and that's not necessarily going to dispel your restlessness or your sloth. But I can just say that every meditator has to go through that. Everybody has to go through that. For some people, it's a short period, and for some people, it's a long period. But everybody has to go through it, and we have to see for ourselves how our mind is working. How does our mind go into dullness and separate from life? Because a dull state is disconnected. How do we do that? Why do we do that? What's happening in our minds to consent to that? And then what's the agitation about? And that's the interesting investigation. Is at the beginning of a retreat, we don't encourage a lot of investigation, because mostly at the beginning of the retreat, I just am encouraging you to be present here. And that's challenging enough to kind of get the mind in the room and the body in the retreat. That's sort of a big, big challenge to start with. And after we're settled, after there's some degree of calmness, then there's the ability to do more investigation. But inevitably, as you're struggling to be present, you'll start to be seeing things about your own mind and how you work, how your mind works. And that can be very rich. And it's not like there's a magic answer. This is a process of self-learning, of investigation. And it sounds like you're engaged in that process. So that's great. Now we're approaching the dinner time, but I see that one more hand that's been up. So we'll just take this last question.
How to treat perception I give to chronic pain. In a way, it annoys me that I'm thinking about it. On the other hand, this is what is.
Okay, with pain, thinking about pain is not very useful. If there's pain, we can embrace it with our mindfulness, very gently bringing our attention to it. Just as you would feel the rising of the belly and the falling of the belly on the inhalation and the exhalation, you can move your attention to where you feel the pain in the body and experience it. If it's diffused throughout the whole body, then you can let the attention be broad and feel that pain in the body. Feeling that pain as changing sensations. Pulling, tingling, throbbing, vibration, heat, cold, burning, searing, pulsing. How do you experience that pain? The thought of the pain is going to be suffering. Because with the thought of the pain, there's the thought, I am in pain. I don't like this. What am I going to do? Where is this going to lead? How long am I going to have to endure this? Why do I have to have this? Who did this to me? Whose fault is it? How should I fix it? What can I do? And then we suffer terribly. But if we're just with the actual pain that's happening in the present moment, then we've at least let go of the mental pain. The Buddha gave the illustration of the two arrows, the darts, where he asks if somebody's struck by a dart, does it hurt? And the monks say, yes, it hurts to be struck by a dart. He says, does it hurt more to be struck by two darts? And they say, yes, that hurts more. The first dart, he said, is the pain that comes with the body. Nobody gets away with life without having some bodily pain, if not now, later. But the second dart we inflict upon ourselves, with the way we relate to that pain, mostly through aversion towards the pain, through not liking it. And so we can extract the second dart and then just be with the first dart, that fact of bodily pain, and know it. Not as a thought, know it as it's happening, as present moment experience. And you'll find that present moment experience of pain is actually easier to deal with than thoughts about it. If that's the condition and the pain is very strong, then that's what you have to pay attention to. And it's another form of mindfulness of the body practice. So it fits within the same category and within the same set of instructions as the posture or the breath that the instructions I gave today. You can apply those same things to the experience of unpleasant sensation or pain in the body. So it actually fits within the same mindfulness of the body practices. And it's quite fine, really quite fine, to work with pain in meditation. It doesn't need to be a distraction. It can be a meditation object. The only other thing I'd like to say about working with pain right now is just that if it's a dominant object, sometimes you do need to balance it with something else. Otherwise, the mind will get tired. And if every time you meditate, it's pain, 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 you're not going to want to meditate. You need to refresh the mind sometimes. And it could be as simple as just feeling the warmth of the hands. To me, I use that a lot as a slightly pleasant object. It's not terribly painful, and yet it's very distinct. So even if my back is killing me, if my mind is weary from the pain, I will just bring my attention to the touch of the hands. There's pressure, there's warmth. And my mind can just unravel a little bit, relax a little bit, and restore its energy and itself before moving back to a more sharp sensation. So you can still, even with strong pain, you can move between them. And some people don't use the hands. Some people will use sound and go to sound for a while to refresh the mind. and then come back to the body and feel that pain. We've been saying pain, 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 but in the meditation, I'm very careful to not conceive of it as pain. Because pain, the word pain, already is like, I don't like it. You know, there's aversion to it. So very careful in the meditation to just feel it as tightness and burning and throbbing and pulsing. The actual sensations. So that I let go of the concepts and thoughts about the pain and I'm with the actual experience. Thank you.